Good morning, America. This is the Katz Roundtable. John Katz from TD's here. It's Sunday morning. What's going on in the world? Well, with us today is one of the smartest guys I know. He was in charge of all of NATO for 4 years, 37 years an admiral in the U.S. Navy, a businessman now. We have Admiral James Stavridis. Good morning, Admiral.
Good morning, Katz.
And maybe people want to know, what are you doing now? You're in the private sector.
I am. I'm vice chairman of the Carlyle Group, one of the very largest private equity firms. And, John, I do internal geopolitical advice. I do external client-facing things, meeting with investors as we raise our eighth fund very successfully. And I do some individual deals in aerospace and defense and cyber, shipbuilding, some of the things in our portfolio that are kind of in my wheelhouse. Love working at the Carlyle Group. Fine organization.
It's a fine company, and boy, they raise a lot of money. Let me ask you, there's so many things going on in the world, and we just completed 1 year of President Biden's new administration, and a lot of people are worried. His ratings are down. Tell us, how do you feel about what's going on in Russia? What's going on in Ukraine? Does Putin mean business, or doesn't he?
Let's start with Ukraine. And let's all remember, by the way, this would be, if Putin invades Ukraine, this would be the third time that he has invaded a European country and changed its borders. The first one was Georgia in 2008, around the time I was Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. And the second time was in 2014. I had just left NATO at that time. And in both cases, John, he still holds significant territorial chunks, both of Georgia, a small democracy in the Caucasus, and, of course, Ukraine, where he holds Crimea. So, number one, he's done this before. Number two, why now? Why is he building these forces now? I think number one, Putin is about to turn 70. He's thinking of his legacy. He wants to kind of reconstruct the idea of the old Soviet Union. So he wants control of these former republics around the periphery of Russia. Number two, he sees the West, Europe, United States, our allies, democracies are distracted by COVID, by internal political divisions. And, you know, John, we always say crime is where motive meets opportunity. Putin wants to cement his legacy as he sees it, taking control of this huge country, Ukraine. That's the motive. And the opportunity is that the West is somewhat divided and distracted. I think, unfortunately, the chances are better than even, call it 60%, that he will, in fact, invade Ukraine and take a chunk out of it. So this is a very dangerous situation, and we are looking at the potential for tanks rolling across southeastern Europe. We all ought to be very concerned about it.
Well, it's going to be a mess, and I just hope that Putin has some refrain on it, because it will be a mess. Now, the other thing that's happening, Admiral.
Indeed, John, yeah. If I could add just a thought there, let's think about what it might actually look like. So around Ukraine, which is a big country, about 44 million people, around the periphery on sort of three sides, from the north, the east, and the south-southeast, Putin has amassed somewhere between 100,000 and 150,000 troops. He's got thousands of tanks, armored personnel carriers. He's got his air force in standby, particularly helicopters, which can move troops behind Ukrainian lines. He is capable of a full-on blitzkrieg operation. Now, I don't think that's what he'll choose to do. I think he will choose instead to come in from one of those vectors, probably the southeast, consolidate an area where he already has an insurgency going in southeastern Ukraine, and then claim another chunk of Ukraine, which would form a land bridge connecting Russia proper with Crimea down at the very south of Ukraine. We ought to be concerned about that, because it puts him in a position of demonstrating to the world that he can act with complete impunity anywhere around the periphery of Russia. So the bottom line, John, is what should we be doing about it? And I'll tell you three things. Number one, we have to get military assistance, lethal weapons, in the hands of the Ukrainians. That's anti-tank, anti-aircraft, and so on. Number two, we have to impose significant economic sanctions on Putin that range from personal sanctions on Putin and his wealth to massive sanctions on the Russian economy, their oil and gas sector, Nord Stream 2. There ought to be nothing but air whistling through that pipe. And then thirdly, if he does this, NATO ought to respond, not by, you know, attacking Russia, that's preposterous, but moving NATO troops closer to the Russian border in places like Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Romania, Poland. That is what Putin doesn't want. If he invades Ukraine, we ought to give him a big dose of what he doesn't want economically, militarily, politically. We have the capacity to do that. I hope that deters him. And our best hope is to continue to be very forthright and very direct with this dictator in Russia.
Well, will NATO listen to Joe Biden?
Yes, NATO is listening to Joe Biden. And if you look at what the alliance has done, it's been surprisingly aligned. All of the nations have made statements opposing what Putin is doing. Many of the nations are flooding weapon systems into Ukraine. I think it is a concerted NATO response. The question is not whether NATO will listen to Joe Biden. The question is whether Putin will listen to Joe Biden. I think the jury is out on that. And unfortunately, in the wake of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, I think there's a perception in the mind of Vladimir Putin that the U.S. is weak. We have got to disabuse him of that notion.
Germany, will Putin turn off the heating and the gasoline, or the gas goes to Germany? Would he turn it off if Germany participates with Joe Biden?
Germany gets, you are correct, about 70%, 60 to 70% of their natural gas, which they use in heating in many ways, from Russia. So that is a concern. And this is why the United States, for a couple of decades, has been telling the Europeans, don't build this Nord Stream 2 pipeline. It creates more vulnerabilities on Russian gas. Two responses to that, John. One is, don't forget, when Putin turns off that gas, that's his biggest source of income. So he may want to turn it off as a bit of a demonstration, perhaps. He can't afford to just turn off the taps to Europe, because that's where his cash comes from. He doesn't have other big suppliers out there. Point number two, here's where the U.S. can help. And I got three initials for you, LNG, liquefied natural gas. Now, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. That's not an immediate fix. But over time, that's where the Europeans ought to be looking. I don't think Germany will simply default to Vladimir Putin's wishes. They'll find other ways to provide electricity, which can be come off the European grid. There can be LNG sources. Putin will be under massive sanctions. I think that Germany will stay with us. And so far, they have.
And my other concern, don't forget, I mean, just my opinion, you're the expert, that Turkey is, and Erdogan is almost partners with Putin on many things. And Germany has become partners with Putin on many things. So that's why I worry about NATO. But, you know, you feel they're going to stick with it, they'll stick with it.
You should worry about NATO always in terms of keeping, in this case today, 30 nations all moving in the same direction. It's like trying to ride a bicycle that has 30 different pedals. It's hard work. And I did it for 4 years as Supreme Allied Commander. And on any given issue, you'll see some of the nations come along and others stand back. I'll give you an example, John. When I led the war in Libya, the combat operations there, not all the nations of NATO participated in that. Turkey did, by the way. Germany did not. It varies. So the nature of an alliance is you're not going to get everybody in lockstep on every issue, but I would take NATO and the alliance and its capability way ahead of any kind of alliance structure that Vladimir Putin is able to put together. A final thought, 30 nations, John, 55% of the world's GDP, 3 million men and women under arms, active duty, another 4 million reserves, 55,000 combat aircraft, 1,000 ocean-going warships. This is a very capable alliance.
There's one important question as a former naval officer that I'd like you to answer. And I understand you have a new book I want to talk about. We only have 2 minutes left. Hypersonic weapons. These missiles travel at almost 1 mile a second. If you were a admiral on a $25 billion aircraft carrier, would you worry?
Yes, I would. And both Russia and China are moving rapidly. And unfortunately, John, I would say they are a bit ahead of the United States on creating these hypersonic cruise missiles. They go 7 times the speed of sound. And they can maneuver at the end game. So they're a very difficult target. Now, we do have ways to defend our carriers. We have destroyers and cruisers that have missiles. We can create directed energy weapons, but we have a ways to go in defending against these hypersonics. They're a big concern to the Pentagon right now, and you're smart to raise that issue.
Thank you. And you have a new book before we close up. Tell us about the new book.
John, it's called The Sailor's Bookshelf, 50 Books to Know the Sea. And, you know, who's got time to read 50 books? So I picked out the 50 books that taught me the most about the oceans. And they range from novels like The Cain Mutiny Court Martial or Moby Dick, the great sailing, whaling story, to nonfiction books about the strategy and the geopolitics of the oceans. It's a deep dive, if you'll pardon the pun, into the oceans for a reader. And I hope it sparks interest in the 70% of the world that's covered by the world's oceans. The Sailor's Bookshelf, 50 Books to Know the Sea.
Well, thank you so much, Admiral. And I promise you that we're going to have a book party for you when New York opens up again. And God bless you and God bless everything you do for our country in the past and in what you're doing now. God bless you.
And the same right back to you, John, for holding these conversations and helping inform the American public across a wide range of views. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. God bless America.